The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, here we go, folks. Welcome. The Power Hour has arrived. Good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. This portion of the program is brought to you by K's, 1013 Cass Avenue, Woonsocket. Lunch, dinner, or drinks in the lounge, stop in the K's. You can call them at 401-762-9675, Cass Avenue, right across from CVS. It's K's. Open up the napkin, and boom, there is the menu. I want to say good afternoon to everybody tuning in on Facebook Live. Facebook Live brought to you by EliteWirelessRI.com. EliteWirelessRI.com. Kerry is our producer. It's Monday. It's Monday at 1 o'clock, and that can only be one thing. Let's bring him in. He is the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com, and we want to say good afternoon to our friend Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John. Great to be with you.
Justin, I want to start off with what I think is very interesting and telling, and it's one of those things that some people, it's a little bit of inside baseball, but it just is somewhat insight into not only the Democrat Party and the fracture that's existing right now, but the type of individuals that are in tremendous positions of power. And I'm talking about the Kathy Gregg story, where they did an exit interview with Patricia Morgan, who's not seeking re-election. And I think that's great, by the way, that the Journal does that. I love the fact, I praise the Journal for doing, number one, they continue to do, you know, the candidates meet with the editorial board. I didn't know that. They do these exit interview with the candidates and so forth. But she relays a story, Patricia Morgan, and it's outlined very well in this morning's Providence Journal, that Matt, the Mattiello people, the speaker, and has his chief of staff call Governor Raimondo, Patricia Morgan, and wanted her to call out Governor Raimondo and knock something. Now, Patricia Morgan is the minority leader. She's not even a Democrat. And not just once, but called her more than once and wants Patricia Morgan to take a shot at something that Governor Raimondo had passed with this whole red flag legislation. So what's several elements of this, and I want to get your thought on it, but she said that Mattiello's chief of staff now, Leo Skenyon, called me on two occasions and asked me to attack the governor for them. She provides the Journal with the cell phone record that has Skenyon's cell phone coming into Patricia Morgan of right around February 26, 2018. When the Journal contacts Skenyon, now chief of staff to Mattiello, his first response is, I've never called Rep Morgan. Never. 100%, no room for doubt. I've never called her. Then, Leo Skenyon, chief of staff now, not some low aide, chief of staff, who also, by the way, makes a good living, but anyhow, is then told, well, she produced a phone record of the call. He changes his answer to, I don't remember calling her, but then says, but if I did, it wasn't about Governor Raimondo. Well, there's several things at play here. Number one, first he says, I never called her. When shown that there is actually a cell phone record, he said, I don't remember calling, but if I did, it wasn't about the governor. Now, here's the thing, Justin, and we'll get your reaction, but if he doesn't remember calling, how does he know what he didn't call about? He obviously did call her, caught in a red-handed lie, chief of staff, and encouraging the minority Republican leader to attack the governor. I'd love your take on the whole. I find that to be a very interesting story.
Well, yeah, to me, the most interesting aspect is this impulse to lie, as if the story has to be so simplistic for the public that it can't be known that he called. Because I have to think, people kind of assume this stuff goes on. And in a certain sense, it would be very easy to phrase it in a way that doesn't seem terrible. You know, Scanlon might say something like, well, you know, we had our doubts about that legislation, so I wanted to make sure that the minority leader had seen it and was aware of it. In other instances, there was a more political story involving a governor that the Scanlon apparently called Morgan about. But, nobody would be surprised if the relatively conservative speaker had somebody say, hey, make sure the minority leader has seen this. You know, we're collaborating. We have similar views on some legislation, and that's it. And I think you could pretty easily get over a little revelation like this by explaining it to some extent, honestly. But it's the sense that they have to deceive people about this that really makes it strange to me.
Not only that, but if we go through, when you were the chief of staff for Speaker Mattiello, I mean, Justin, I think on something like that, your word has to mean something, because this is the same individual that swore they had no indication that Gallison was under investigation. They had absolutely no inkling that he was involved with the types of things he was involved with. They had, you know, as chief of staff of the speaker, had no idea that Carnevale was not living in Johnston, even though he's supposed to be living in Providence. They had no idea that Frank Montanaro was receiving the tuition benefit. You're dealing with a group that, unless then you show them the concrete evidence, their first inclination is to lie. And what I also find interesting about it is he took Kathy Gregg at her word. For instance, Kathy Gregg, as a journalist, as you know, you can't bluff. If she said, I have a copy of the record, she can't be bluffing and not have a copy of it. But he didn't even say, like, well, I want to see it. He immediately folded like a tent, like a cheap suit fell of just, oh, well, if that's the case, then I don't remember calling her. And I don't remember calling her, but if I did call her, it certainly wasn't about the governor. Well, if you don't remember calling her, first you denied you called her. When proven you did call her, you say, I don't remember it, but if I did, it wasn't about that. I mean, it's just, again, it's like one lie after another. But he didn't question Kathy Gregg. As soon as the jig was up, he then just fell to, well, I don't remember calling her. Even though he stated he's never called her. There's no way to interpret never. I mean, it's as you say, it's not even like, listen, from time to time, we have conversations regarding, she is the minority leader. Are you on board with this? The speaker would like to talk to you about this. The speaker saw your proposal for that. It would be would make sense to me if, in fact, there was some kind of communication. But what I find striking is Scanlon's first reaction was complete denial. And then when shown that he was lying, which he was, he then said, I don't remember. I don't remember it then.
Right. Well, and that gets to the whole kind of, for lack of a better word, the cheapness of it all. The dishonesty, it seems like it comes back to bite them right within the story. Obviously, Minority Leader Morgan would have been, nobody would falter for saying, okay, the Speaker's Chief of Staff is calling me to comment on something I'd probably comment on anyway, so let me see if I can move some legislation here or something like that. That would be an absolutely ordinary legislative transaction. You know, here's how we work together across the aisle. But yet, according to the story, she just said thanks and hung up, as in, you know, I don't even want to get involved with this.
Right.
I don't want to make deals with these people, because which indicates, I don't think Morgan is so, what's the right word, pragmatic, or so against, you know, kind of making deals. I don't think she's so anti-deal making that she would do that if there weren't also this impression like, okay, I'll go out and do this for them and I may never actually get the payback. And as you say, it would be, you would actually kind of expect the chief of staff to have some kind of a working relationship with the minority leader, else why do we have minority leaders, you know, that, and leadership? And they ought to be working together and chatting. And where are you on this? Where is your caucus on this? Where can we work together? And the idea that he would, well, first of all, he would say he never talked to her, and that she can list two times when they specifically talked, but not
yes.
among a whole bunch. It's not as if Morgan said, yeah, we talk regularly, but there were these two times that stuck out. I mean, that makes it very strange. Why is this, you know, once in how many years, 4, 6, 8 years, we had conversation twice, you know, between the chief of staff of the speaker and the minority leader. That's no wonder when the phone rang and he said, hey, it's Leo. She kind of went, all right, I don't know what this is about, but I'm not going to get involved in this. Even though they were bringing things to her attention that would have been very reasonable for her to comment on as a Republican leader.
What do you make also, and again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It's Political Monday. We're talking with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. What do you make of the fact that, you know, Mattiello, he could have asked some members of his party to do it. He could ask some Democrat reps to do it. He could have asked, it says a lot to me that he would not obviously ask the progressives to do it. He didn't want a Democrat doing it, but he wanted someone attacking it. And it also seems to come on tying in on the heels of when this whole thing was announced where the Raimondo people had this quote secret agreement with the Providence City Council. What does it say to you that as much as they're part of the same party, that's pretty sneaky underhanded that the speaker, and now you could say the speaker could claim he knew nothing about it, that Leo did this on his own, Skenyon, which I don't believe, but the speaker's people, they wanted someone to attack Governor Raimondo on this whole issue of the red flag.
Well, actually, what it reminded me of most of all is how sometimes political campaigns will drop stories to journalists, not as in a go off and get them for me on my behalf, but here's some information I want out there and it
right.
might be newsworthy, so let me give it to the Met press.
Sure.
You know, it's we see again and again in the actions of the General Assembly, the structure, the whole way they do things is to protect their members from ever having to do anything that might upset somebody. So when there's a controversial bill, the speaker just makes it go away and nobody actually has to vote on it, that sort of thing. Or when bills come up in committee,
yes.
they just go to further study and nobody ever has to justify
right.
why they went away, why they came back. It's very much like that. It's, well, we're trying to get some negative information about the governor or some legislation the governor supports, so let's go to the Republicans because we don't want to divide our group at all. We don't want anybody taking flack from the governor's office in our caucus, which in some ways is understandable. It does make you kind of wish we had a bigger tent in our governing party so that there were factions that were allowed to be factions within the Democrat Party and say, you know what, we're going to part ways on some things. Instead, they try to behave as if it's all unified. And I guess it's understandable from a political perspective, but it is telling. And it shows how it makes you wonder how much when people vote their own representatives in there, you would think the incentives are supposed to be that you vote somebody in there to do and say the things that you would want done and said, and that they couldn't find anybody among the Democrats who would then be able to go back to their constituents back in their towns and cities and say, look, I opposed the governor's executive order on this and therefore I made a big deal out of it. That they're trying to hide everybody from everything shows it's not really a functioning representative system so much as a political game they're playing.
Yeah. You know what else is interesting to me is, and you remember last fall when the whole Teresa Tanzi, the representative, she came forward, she claimed that a high-level Democrat in a position of leadership told her that it's sex for legislation at the State House. That's the way things work. You needed to provide sex to get legislation passed. She wouldn't name who it was. Within 24 to 48 hours, by the time she then reemerged, it was almost as if the speaker kind of had her under control. I'm just going to say, kind of like metaphorically, like on a leash, so to speak, where suddenly she said, I spoke with Speaker Mattiello, there was going to be no investigation of who said it or anything like that. Instead, she immediately was all excited. We're going to have a panel. We're going to do this and that, da-da-da. And then in the end, as the session just wrapped up, TNZ, all the progressives, they're somewhat surprised that all of their plans that they had and everything else basically just got buried in committee, and that they, in essence, got played. You know, in those first 48 hours, while Matty Yellow was vulnerable, they immediately get to the person, kind of get them on board, promise them, obviously, something. And then you also saw the thing with Maura Walsh, the progressive, after she had said, like, oh, the massive amounts of drinking and bottles and file cabinets. She kind of went underground for 48 hours. And then when she reemerged, she said, oh, I was just talking about the fundraisers. I wasn't talking about the actual State House itself. It's as if, it just reminds me, Justin, of the whole thing of Animal House when they take when they take Flounder's brother's car and they destroy it. And then at the end, they say, you know, Flounder, face it. You know, I won't use the word, but you blanked up. You trusted us. You know, I repeatedly see this, that when something happens, I'll say this for the speaker. He and his operatives, they get to the person, they get them on the page, they basically promise them whatever they want just to kind of make the story go away. And then that individual, and Maura Walsh was the same kind of with Tansy, where they're kind of surprised, like, huh, that's funny. None of the things that I was promised ever made it a committee or saw the light of day. That they said what they had to say in that moment to kind of get the crisis or the scandal kind of settled. But then in the end, boom, they just left empty-handed.
Right, and we'll see how long you can play that game for. Up to this point, there have been no real factions that can oppose the establishment Democrats, for lack of a better term. That the you know, you mess with the Republicans, well, you know, they're not going to be able to do too much to the Democrats at this point. They've got the system pretty well locked up, so they can do that kind of thing. In a moment, they promise you everything, you know, like the abusive boyfriend or something. No, don't call the cops. We're going to make this better. And then,
right,
you know, as time goes on, things get forgotten, and promises get forgotten. But we couldn't do it this year. We'll get it next year.
You
might even see some of that in the back and forth. There was a Province Journal editorial on this recently, too, where the Senate passed the very, very radical equal pay legislation, and the House watered it down quite a bit. And then the Senate refused to consider the House version, which killed the bill, which might have been what everybody in leadership wanted anyway. So there are all these mechanisms they have to make these things disappear. And the progressives, though, they seem to be a lot more, they're a lot more ideological. And in the era of Donald Trump, there's a lot of national force trying to keep them riled up for national purposes. So we may not see them go quite so quietly. And you see that with some of the endorsement fiasco where the Democrat Party in Rhode Island endorsed people.
That's right.
Even people who had been recently Republican or were under indictment or that kind of thing. And one of Maura Walsh, you brought her up with regard to the drinking thing and how she had piped down very quickly. One of the comments she's been quoted nationwide saying is, I'm not satisfied that they just withdrew the nomination for the other guy. That's not enough. And so we're going to start seeing more of those. The progressives are becoming a bit of a tiger by the tail for Rhode Island Democrats. And so we'll see if these tricks can continue for as long as they have in the past.
Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. Justin, I want to go through some of the races, starting with Matt Brown and Governor Raimondo. It's still a little bit in the weeds where, you know, now they're arguing over donations and fossil fuel and things like that. She continues to be out there. She continues to try to, you know, tout that everything is great. She has turned the state around. They continue to basically try to do anything to either announce that new jobs are coming in or jobs could be coming in. She has not given any indication or commit to any debates with Matt Brown. Now, I know there's another Democrat running, Spencer Dickinson, but I think the next 30 days is really crucial for Matt Brown, because they are starting to hit back at him, and he's getting more aggressive. But I am hearing from different Democrats, he's not raising the money that they thought he was going to raise. And in the next 30 days, he needs to really up the game. Or, you know, I think it's telling that Raimondo is confident enough and comfortable enough that she is not willing even to commit to any type of debate at this point. And we are, this Wednesday, the primary is in 7 weeks away. So, granted, there's still plenty of time, and things will really ramp up in the last 2 weeks of it. But I'd like to, your evaluation of how you see the two campaigns right now with both Matt Brown and Governor Raimondo.
Well, this was always going to be a challenge. The challenge for Matt Brown is that Governor Raimondo has clearly tapped into a national Democrat donor base. And a lot of that is also very progressive, which would be Matt Brown, where Matt Brown would want to go. And so I think he may be experiencing something, you know, the average Rhode Islander. We see Governor Raimondo not doing all that well, you know, as an effective governor. And then we see national press coverage that's glowing, and people from across the country giving her millions of dollars to keep running in Rhode Island. And so there's a weird question. It seems like it's hard to understand where that support is coming from. So that may be what Matt Brown is discovering, is that he actually, isn't this great taste to oppose her, at least not in progressive circles nationally. So that might be what he's facing now, is where's this money going to come from? With regard to their campaign finance battles, that seems to be a kind of a battle for the base. I have to think the average Rhode Islander watching this debate, or even the average Democrat primary voter, is wondering why they're not debating various policies. It's kind of conspicuous that, especially given all of the promotion of Raimondo's work on the economy, as disingenuous as I think it is, that's a major theme of hers in a positive vote for me sense. And yet she's not attacking Matt Brown for essentially an insane economic platform he's put out recently. Instead, they're talking about donors and campaign financing, which in some regards is, as you say, it's really in the weeds, but I think it resonates with the progressive base. And so the Raimondo camp is probably just hoping to counter that impression, to say, look, if you want a progressive, I've been putting forth policies, but we've both taken money from fossil fuels, which is the symbol of evil in the activist base on the left. And so I think that's largely what's happening there. And Matt Brown's just finding that there wasn't this hunger. It's not quite as, he's doing better than Link Chafee with the, you know, the three Bernie Sanders supporters, or might have even only been two. Who told him there was a big wave of support out there.
Yeah, that's right.
And that would help to explain Brown's decisions early on. I mean, when he first entered the race prospectively, either as an independent or a Democrat, some of the question was, well, what is he after here? If he's after a higher profile, running as the independent might be the way to go. If he's after some sort of, you know, payoff from the governor, okay, if you drop out or don't run too hard, maybe we'll find a place for you in my administration, that kind of thing, then running in a primary would make sense. But then when he really went after her, that was clearly not the case. And what might explain that is if there was more support out, or if he thought there was more support out there than there really was for the fiery progressive to oppose Governor Raimondo.
You know what's funny, Justin, is the way they come off, the progressives, the Bernie Sanders type, the Matt Brown, Raimondo, whoever you want to talk about, that young woman from New York, Alexandra Cortez, whatever, but they come off as if, you know, when you see these grassroots parties, that they love to sit around and pontificate and talk about policy. And, you know, we could talk about different policy all day. So Governor Raimondo, here's an opportunity to stand on stage and talk about values and policies and where they're different. But when it comes to the election, the Raimondo people seemingly have no interest at all in standing on a stage and discussing anything with Matt Brown. I just find it comical, just because, you know, anytime you see I see on Twitter, like Matt Brown and his his some of the comments of the people that go to the house parties. They're like, oh my God, you know, we talked for 2 hours about clean energy and we could have talked for five more hours and into the night. And this is like so incredible. And this is what democracy looks like. But then when we're actually talking about an election, Raimondo people are like, no, 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 we're not committing to any debates with the guy. Like they have no interest in standing on a stage with him and talking about policy.
Yeah, no, I like to think it's because progressive policy is nuts.
And right.
You're not
going
to claim to be driving the economy with progressive policies. And so she can't, it's an impossible links to join.
Yeah.
What would be interesting, though, as you mentioned, Raimondo doesn't want to debate. It'd be interesting if the Brown people would figure out where Raimondo was going to be at the beach all summer.
Right.
Because she's having these talking from there, and just start showing up and have an impromptu debate on social media. That would make for some interesting online video.
It would be, yes. But I just find if, you know, they're willing to sit on a back deck in someone's house, wherever, someone in Bristol or Warren, and for an hour and a half drinking wine, discuss, you know, how the country should be, and da-da-da, but what's this, you know, commit to doing a debate? Oh, no, we're not doing anything like that. Last week, I have one more question for you, and I think this remains, and I'm asked this all the time by Democrats, is an Aaron Ruggenberg voter a Matt Brown voter? I'm going to give you what I tell people. I think what really saves Raimondo at the end of the day with the Tansies, the Marsha Ranglin, Maura Walsh's, what saves her, and I think what Matt Brown has run into is being a male progressive. I think Raimondo, although she's not as progressive as they like her to be, it seems as if the woman card seemingly at this point trumps the progressive card. Now that could change, but I'll ask you what I am asked, and that is, I'm not convinced the progressive going into the booth to vote for Aaron Ruggenberg, I'm not convinced that then they're voting for Matt Brown. I think some of those could end up then being Raimondo voters.
I think that's certainly right. The big thing, even beyond the gender, the gender card, it's kind of unified in a lot of ways, I think, in a progressive mind with just the progressive card. And Raimondo is pretty progressive, and certainly more in her rhetoric than in her actions, but that's often all that counts. And so when you're looking at Ruggenberg versus McKee, who has been a pretty relatively conservative Democrat, as mayor of Cumberland and so on, you know, school introducing mayoral academies, a sort of school choice effort. That's an easier choice for a progressive. With the Raimondo is far enough to the left by any measure that you can say, well, sometimes you just have to compromise for political purposes. Sometimes you just have to take the lesser good. You know, you can't go all the way to the extreme. So it's much, she's made it, and her people have made it a point of this. She's made it much easier to compromise with her, on her. You know, she's good. She's strong enough on the issues I care about, versus somebody like McKee, who's just kind of known to be not as friendly with the union, certainly, and also relatively moderate or even conservative in some respects. I think that would probably be more of it, I think, than the gender card. Although it's hard to tease those two apart these days.
Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We'll speak with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Political Monday. Justin, I want to move to the Republican race. Last week, the Funk people released their own poll. They didn't release all the information about it, but they show that Mayor Fung, according to them, has a pretty substantial lead right now in the Republican primary. Now, just in the past 2 weeks, I have seen all three of them speak, and I noticed Patricia Morgan released a press release today. She's having a press conference tomorrow. I was at an event she was at the other night. She seemed very confident, but also aware that she needs to start to move the needle a little bit. That I get the sense, I could be wrong, that they're not getting the traction they want to get. I will say that Mayor Fung, for his part, he's a better candidate than he was 4 years ago. Obviously, you learn a lot by running. You build on the name recognition. But he definitely just seems, the Fung people rightly or wrongly, they seem pretty comfortable and feel they're in command. How do you see right now? Now, again, we have 7 weeks to go, but how do you see the Republican primary right now?
You know, I don't think it's changed all that much, honestly. If you compare the results that Mayor Fung just put out, and of course we don't have any context. Patricia Morgan has said that some people she knows got the call for this poll, and it was a push poll, and that it spent a lot of time bad-mouthing her and then said, okay, who do you support? In which case, you'd expect the numbers to be different. But if you compare it to the similar poll where he only released these results in November, his numbers have gone up a lot, but it's understandable. So in November, his poll found he had 45% of the vote, and now it's 62% of the vote. This is primary voters. But Morgan is about the same. They swapped out Trillo for Ferrucci, which could have put some people more in the Fung camp. People who might have voted for Trillo but not Ferrucci might have gone to Fung. And then there are fewer undecided people. So it's entirely plausible that Fung's 45 would go up to 62 on this poll, just because we're getting closer to the election and people are making up their minds. It seems like it's pretty much as one would have expected. I don't see a whole lot of change, and I'm not sure what they could do to jog that loose at this point in the Morgan camp. They really would have to come up with something that would make them seem more plausible, and I think that's probably a lot of what's dogging her now, is that all the polls that have come out, not from the Fung camp, but from news media and others, show that she doesn't do very well against the governor. And that's going to be the main concern, I think, for Republican voters in the primaries, who can actually win in November. And that's going to be a challenge for her to come up with something that will convince up to 30% of Republican primary voters who are currently, you know, she needs to get in her camp, that she's the person who can take it all the way to November. It's just not clear. That's a huge, huge hurdle for her to try to overcome.
I think you're right. The name recognition hurdle remains just that, a name recognition hurdle. I know sometimes the candidates, they think people are paying attention. They think more people know about them. It's amazing how people don't pay attention sometimes as much, and so therefore they're not, it takes a lot to cut through to really get name recognition. So I think the same thing, and I have no idea, even if it's a push poll, take that number down a little bit, you're probably going to have 30,000, right around 30,000 people vote in that primary. Even if it is a push poll, you take the Ferrucci 4%, Morgan, I think it was 22%, you still got a big hurdle to go to try to climb into that. I think it also hurts her that Ferrucci's in. I don't know if it's going to be enough, but just if it was somewhat, just as they call it, like the anybody but Fung, anti-Fung type vote, there's two different people to go to as opposed to one. One last thought on the Democrat. Now, I noticed in 2014, I tweeted this out over the weekend, so about 100,000 people voted in 2014 in the Democrat primary, and Gina Raimondo got 42% of the vote, and she got about 54,000 votes. So I have every reason to believe they're going to have another, maybe even more, but 100,000 in the primary. But when you add up Angel Tavares, Clay Pell, and then there was that other candidate that got 2,000 votes whose name escapes me, you know, that they're still going into the primary, she still had more people not voting for her than voting for her. So what I think the challenge is, can Raimondo get 60,000 votes? Can she get 65,000 votes? Can she got 42% of the votes last time in the Democrat primary. What if she, you know, and she right now, they feel pretty confident they can beat Matt Brown, but is it going to be 60-40? Is it going to be 55-45? I mean, is it going to be closer than that? We still have a long way to go, but I think those are some of the numbers to be looked at, and she has started to attack. She has started to at least attack Matt Brown. Folks, he's the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, great to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again.
Great to talk with you, John. Look forward to the next one.
All right, folks, there it is. Justin joining us right here on this Political Monday. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. With that, we'll open up the phone line, 766-1380. Folks, I want to remind you, you're looking for a great lunch. Hey, why not? Stop into Tavolo, lunch or dinner. T-A-V-O-L-O, Tavolo Wine Bar, Tuscan Grill. 970 Douglas Pike, Route 7 in Smithfield. You can call them at 349-4979. Authentic Italian food, delicious steak and seafood. And what a wine list. An extensive wine list, probably one of the best in Rhode Island. In fact, they received, Tavolo received the 2018 Wine Spectator Award in Northern Rhode Island. And here's the real win. You want to try a delicious, and I mean delicious, place for lunch. Try the Tavolo there Monday through Friday. Three-course price fixed lunch is just $14.95. Creative, affordable dining. Try the grilled swordfish, the fresh pasta, the fresh lobster ravioli, the baked cod. I love their chicken parm. The veal parm. All the desserts are made in-house. Delicious tiramisu, key lime pie. Tonight, Monday nights, 50% off a bottle of wine, and the price fixed dinner on Sunday and Monday is just $29.95. Tavolo, everybody's buzzing about it. Wine bar and Tuscan grill. I saw some of the members of the New England Patriots there when I was there. Bird spreads in Northern Rhode Island. 970 Douglas Pike, Route 7 in Smithfield, Tavolo. Authentic Italian food, and take advantage of the lunch special. Three-course price fix, Monday through Friday, is just $14.95. You can find them online, TavoloWineBar.com. T-A-V-O-L-O. TavoloWineBar.com. Stop in and see them. You're going to love it. 970 Douglas Pike in Smithfield. John DePietro, it is the John DePietro Show. Folks, 766-1380. 766-1380. You can email me, John, at DePietro.com. A lot more ahead on this Monday.
I'm Alan Fung, and as mayor, I helped make Cranston one of the top 50 cities in America. Now, I want to fix Rhode Island. Here's how I plan to do it. Drop the sales tax to 5%, keeping Rhode Islanders shopping in Rhode Island. Institute a low-fee guarantee to make it cheaper for businesses to operate. And I want to help them cut through the red tape with our business concierge program. Let's make Rhode Island the best state to do business in New England.
Paid for by the Committee for Alan Fung.
Well, folks, everyone's raving Rhode Island's number one garden center. You know what I'm going to say. PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center, 3688 Quaker Lane in North Kingstown. It's Steve, it's Debbie, it's Junior, it's Byron. You can call them at 295-4399. 295-4399. They're right next door to Allie's Tack Shop, across from Allie's Donuts. Rhode Island's number one garden center. Look for them on Facebook. PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center. Flowers, trees, shrubs, a full garden center. Greenhouse, everything locally grown, homegrown. Remember, buy local. Excellent quality and less expensive since they grow locally. Plus, landscape construction, mulch delivery, installation, loom, mulch, screen loom. They're open 7 days a week. They're open until 5 o'clock tonight. Look for the magnificent outdoor display. It's PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center. Wait till you see it. People drive from all over, and with good reason. Wait till you see the different annuals, perennials, the colors they have, and the hydrangeas are incredible. Hanging flower pouches, just the best. PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center. Stop in and see them. 3688 Quaker Lane in North Kingstown. It's Steve, it's Debbie, it's Junior, it's Byron. Right next door to Allie's Tack Shop. Across from Allie's Donuts. Down the street from Richard's Pub and down the street from Tarbox Toyota. Look for them on Facebook at PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center.
You're not like anyone else. and neither is your company, which is why at Bank RI, our commercial banking doesn't treat you like anyone else. With signature commercial banking from Bank RI, you'll find a premier set of services, flexible lending options, and the kind of personalized attention that makes our commercial banking unlike, well, anyone else. Signature commercial banking only from Bank RI. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Folks, remember, if you're going to grow it, what do we say? Grow it green. Southern New England's indoor garden supply shop. They carry the industry's top name brand equipment such as Sunleaves, Hydrofarm, Sunlight Supply. Grow it green. They specialize in hydroponics, soils, nutrients, lighting, ventilation, and most important, knowledge and experience. They supply quality products and reliable information to hobby gardeners and MMJ patients. Grow it green. They're located 122 Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. You can call them at 508-883-GROW. 508-883-GROW. They're open 7 days a week. I received the nicest email from Scott, who lives in Lincoln. Dear JD, thank you for telling me about Grow It Green. I am, in fact, a hobby gardener. My wife and I grow inside, and we love Grow It Green. We didn't even know the store existed until you told us about it. I see why they're so successful, and their staff was very, very helpful. They had everything we needed at Grow It Green. Folks, Grow It Green, Southern New England's only. You're very welcome, Scott. Only five-star rated indoor growing supply store, 20 years experience, competitive pricing on all major brands, lighting brands, nutrient brands, friendly, educated staff. They'll assist you with all aspects of your grow. Consultations are available. They're open 7 days a week. Remember, if you're going to grow it green. All right, and we're back on this Monday. Good afternoon, one and all. It's Juan. It's John DePietro. This is the John DePietro Show. We are now, in a little over an hour. They're expected that there will, in fact, be a... there will be a strike at Rhode Island Hospital and also affecting Hasbro Children's Hospital. I'm looking at the Drudge Report. Last Dance. Stormy's husband files for divorce. Infamous stripper Stormy Daniels' husband files for divorce. Let's see. It's another story, though, but all eyes. This strike is going to take place. There does not seem to be anything that is going to be able to stop it in any way. It is going to happen. And then you wait till you see the circus that's going to take place over the... over at the hospitals. New York Daily News has absolutely been gutted. 35 people to 9. They've cut 50% of their staff at the New York Daily News. But getting back to, this is something, again, for those, if you have to take someone or have a loved one in Rhode Island Hospital, or as one of our listeners wrote, at Hasbro Children's Hospital, it's going to be a tough situation because you're going to have chaos outside and then you're going to have fill-in workers inside the hospital. So there's no way that this strike is in any way going to be averted within the next hour. Rhode Island, a Lifespan that owns Rhode Island Hospital, they are already bringing in staff that is apparently set to handle it. But it's going to be very, very difficult, and I feel bad for people that have. I've had people, family members in Rhode Island Hospital. That's tough enough, let alone with new personalities that are going to be coming in, people that normally don't, in fact, work there. And then you're going to have everything that's going to be going on outside.
which it sounds like it's going to be a difficult situation. So the Department of Health says they're going to be monitoring the situation. Lifespan, how about the fact Lifespan is going to spend $10 million this week to try to, because they have to bring in extra people that are going to be dealing with this strike situation. It's on. Nurses unions are talks with Lifespan done for the day. And the strike will commence at 3 o'clock. So that is, without question, that is happening. Some medical services diverted. Rhode Island Hospital, Hasbro nurses prepared to strike. I feel terrible. As someone that is, I've spent tremendous amount of time and raised tremendous amount of money for the kids at Hasbro Children's Hospital. You know, those families are on edge as it is, let alone what's about to happen here. Rhode Island Hospital, Hasbro Children's Nurses, going to go on strike in about 1 hour and 10 minutes. Last minute federal mediation session failed to yield an agreement to avert the strike. Local 5098 said they were told they're going to be relieved from work duties at 1:30. Ooh, ahead of the strike, so it's already on. Lifespan has hired replacement nurses to work for the next 4 days. Rhode Island Hospital is the state's only level one trauma center. Continue taking emergency trauma patients, burn patients, cardiac, respiratory. Walk-ins will still be accepted at the ER. I'd go to another hospital. Department of Health has said medical patients by ambulance to other area hospitals. So it's going to be very, very serious. Department of Health, Dr. Nicole Alexander Scott, said the department's incident command center has been activated. And the unions, now they are going to be there in force. The question is, are they going to be blocking ambulances trying to get in? We don't know. A spokesperson for Lifespan said the hospital made a new offer to the union Monday, 4-year contract, 9% to 25% wage increases. The union wants 28% raises. Wow. Lifespan said, we are very disappointed that the union leadership is going ahead with the strike. The hospital has offered extremely competitive wage benefit packages worth tens of millions of dollars. The union, they plan to, and they're going to have other union people in there. So this should be quite a circus at in and around Rhode Island Hospital. And that's going to be kicking off. You know, it's difficult any day that, in fact, people have to be involved or go to the hospital. People are on edge. How would you like to have, like one of, I mentioned, one of our listeners sent me an email that their young son is supposed to be having surgery, I think on Wednesday, life-saving surgery at Hasbro, and the nurses are all going to be out on strike. Lifespan says that the union leadership walked away from the bargaining table. Instead, they want to go on strike. So that is going to be a tough situation over the next, well, it's going to be all week because now they're then going to be part of a lockout. So, but this is going to be, you're going to see, you know, the union Council 94 people out there. You're going to see firefighters out there. You're going to see a big contingent out there. And I don't know. I mean, the people are rushing to the hospital to deal with loved ones that are in there, an emergency situation. And then you're going to be dealing with chaos and picket lines outside. Now, I've also heard from people that are expected to work, and they're fearful because they're the union people are calling them scabs, and they're going to be going after them on the picket line. And so going to be a very, very difficult situation. Mary Ellen says, disgraceful. It is. Let's see, Anne Marie. It's all about money. You know, it's funny, Anne Marie. I was engaging with someone on who's involved with it, with the union, and they said, it's not about money. It's about safety. It's about for patients. So I said, really? So it's about that? So if they upgrade those things with no raises, you guys would go back? Oh, no, we want the raises. Well, then it is about the money. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. But I feel awful for anyone that either has a family member at Rhode Island Hospital, and especially children at Hasbro Children's Hospital. One of our listeners, 4-year-old son, expect to have life-saving surgery. And, you know, they're going to have to be dealing with this on Wednesday. I mean, that is just over the top. And the union walked away from the table saying, no, we want to strike. This portion of the program of the John DePietro Show is brought to you by Kay's, 1013 Cass Avenue, Woonsocket. Whether it's lunch or dinner, across from CVS, it says, Kay's, open up the napkin, and there it is, Kay's, 762-9675 at Kay's. Well, folks, 766-1380. Again, go to DePietro.com. You can see the story we have where illegals are getting paid and they're being called misclassified workers. What's this? Well, you can read the story at DePietro.com. Hey, I want to remind you about K&R Auto Salvage. Call them today, 353-9200. 353-9200, K&R Auto Salvage. Large facility offering used car parts. K&R, they buy junk cars, auto wrecks. Family business, close to 30 years serving their customers. K&R, wholesale used auto parts, guaranteed quality, and they'll pay you cash for your junk car. At K&R, you have a junk car? Call K&R, 353-9200, 353-9200. K&R Auto Salvage. They'll pay you the most money for your junk car. And remember, with K&R, access to nationwide inventory, call them for all major car or truck parts, and K&R will pay you the highest price for your junk car. You can rely on K&R, 353-9200, located 950 Smithfield Road in North Providence. They're right off of Middle Spring Avenue. Go with the leader. Go with the best. Karen and her family, folks, 30 years serving their customers at K&R Auto Salvage. Call them, 353-9200, 353-9200 for K&R Auto Salvage. And I also want to remind you, folks, if you're ever in an accident, don't panic, but pick up the phone and call, that's right, West Fountain Auto Body. Call them at 272-3340. I didn't say it was your fault. There are people texting and driving. There are people that are just not paying attention, or an illegal or a drunk driver. Call West Fountain Auto Body today, 272-3340. Located 400 West Fountain Street in Providence. It's West Fountain Auto Body. It's Kenny. It's Patricia. They're going to work for you. You, not the insurance company. But call them first. Now listen, if you're ever in an accident, call West Fountain Auto Body, 272-3340. Located 400 West Fountain Street in Providence. It's Kenny, it's Patricia. I brought family there, friends there. Whether it's a small dent or a nearly totaled vehicle, you can depend on West Fountain Auto Body, 272-3340 for West Fountain Auto Body.
He's John DePietro. He's really in the know with his talk show on your radio. He's John DePietro. Tune in your radio. Go get him, Johnny D.
Thank you very much. Well, folks, it's John DePietro. Now, listen, enjoy this Monday. Follow the news. I think there's going to be some problems. I think there's going to be violence with this strike at Rhode Island Hospital and Hasbro, and we'll cover it. Stay tuned. John Deanna's next. We're back tomorrow at 11 right here. It's AM 1380, 99.9 FM, and it's WNRI.
WNRI, Woonsocket.